The loss of a loved one is one of the most difficult moments we all hope to avoid but are bound to experience. There's little which can assuage the pain and grief of a family member's passing, and yet no matter how expected or tragically surprising it may be, there's one aspect that always seems to make things that much worse. When the lost one is a child. Cemeteries all around the world have sections dedicated to children whose lives were cut short in accidents, crimes, and due to illness. These are always the most somber and heartbreaking sections behind those wrought iron gates. In 2010, one family would come to learn that the loss of a beloved sibling may not be the last horror they'd have to endure. 48 years after the passing of 9-year-old Paula Rehm, her surviving sisters were confronted by a monstrous crime for which there's no acceptable motive. On a warm summer day in August, the caretaker of the Riverview Burial Park in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, made a horrifying discovery. Sometime during the night, an unknown suspect entered the cemetery and dug open the 9-year-old's grave. By the next morning, the vault had been cracked open and the child's casket removed. Already having suffered through the loss of their sister once, the Rehm sisters struggled to comprehend who could commit such an atrocious crime against a little girl who had already suffered so much. Investigators began working from the assumption that the crime may have been committed by teenagers or local kids looking to pull off an ill-humored, horrifying prank. However, a collection of bizarre evidence found nearby in a series of cemetery break-ins and vandalism in the area made many wonder if the theft of Paula's remains might have been tied to the arcane rituals of an old religion. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 185, The Stolen Grave of Paula Rehm. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today we examine a disturbing crime somewhat different from those normally covered on Trace Evidence. While the vast majority of episodes focus in on victims vanishing from their everyday lives or struck down by a violent killer, there are some who choose to target those who have already been laid to rest. We'll get into the case and its disturbing details after a few quick messages about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate directly via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions through the website or email me directly at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. We've all lost someone we love, suffered through confronting that harsh reality, and said our goodbyes as they're laid to rest. For most, the tragedies of life end with their last breath, but for others, it is only the beginning. While murderers and abductors stalk the streets of the living, a different breed of monster focuses in on the dead, and for the most part, those crimes are vastly ignored. This is episode 185, The Stolen Grave of Paula Rehm. On a warm summer afternoon in August of 2010, the caretaker of Riverview Burial Park in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, was making the rounds to check on the cemetery. Amidst vast stretches of finely manicured grass stood the stone markers of those forever interred beneath. Thousands of names etched into granite, tracing back hundreds of years, representing many of the ancestors of those who still live in the area and continue to visit family plots. Riverview sits wedged between the expanse of South Duke Street and the Conestoga River, bordered on its western and southern edges by the dense woods of Lancaster County Central Park and Williamson Park. Behind a thin line of trees in the cemetery's southern section sits perhaps the most grievous and difficult series of tombstones, those of children lost well before their time, arranged in an area known as Babyland. Both the overgrowth of the woods and the stretching tree line offer privacy for those remote sections of the cemetery, one where mourners might visit in undisturbed privacy. Always known as a place of deep pain and haunting grief, when the caretaker walked in on the morning of Friday, August 13th, his own somber approach was transformed into one of horror and disbelief. There, beside a disrupted stone marker, he found the earth torn open. Large chunks of dirt and rock lie piled around a gaping hole once the final resting place of a child. Beneath the earth in the shadowy hole, all that remained was the vault, its lid broken and tossed aside. Hauntingly, the casket and body of 9-year-old Paula Rehm were missing, which would begin an investigation into a truly monstrous crime that shocked and outraged the community and devastated the family for years to come. Paula Marie Rehm was born on Saturday, March 7th, 1953, to parents Paul and Mary in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. At the time of her birth, Paula was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, which is defined as a group of disorders that affect a person's ability to move and maintain balance and posture. Symptoms of cerebral palsy can widely vary between individuals, as those with severe cases may require special equipment to walk or may never walk at all, while less severe cases can result in a person having difficulty walking but not requiring equipment or assistance to do so. There are several different types of cerebral palsy, and Paula was diagnosed with one known as spastic, which is the most common form and represents approximately 80% of all cerebral palsy diagnoses, according to the CDC. Unfortunately, Paula had the most severe form, known as spastic quadriplegia, which affects all four limbs as well as the face. As a result, Paula's family were informed that she was unlikely to ever walk or speak, and may also suffer from problems with her vision and hearing. Although this news was a heavy blow to Paula's family, who didn't have the financial means to afford a lot of specialized treatment, she was welcomed home with open arms by her parents. At the time of her birth, the Rehms had three other daughters, Shirley, Faye, and Catherine. As the youngest of the three girls, Paula's closest sister in age, Catherine, was 10 years her senior. As soon as Paula was brought home, her siblings were enchanted by the little girl, and they would dedicate their free time to helping take care of her. According to them, Paula was a loving, beautiful child who, while she didn't speak, frequently laughed, and they took great pleasure in finding different ways to make her giggle and smile. Due to her inability to walk, Paula's sisters carried her everywhere and ensured that she was always taken care of. Across the first few years of her life, the Rehm family managed to have a special chair constructed so that Paula could sit with the family, whether they were at the dinner table or listening to the radio. Music quickly became a source of joy for the child, who fell in love with listening to American Bandstand, a popular music show of the time that focused on live performances and dancing. Another activity that Paula absolutely loved was going for car rides, and while her parents couldn't afford to own a car, she was often taken along for rides with men her sisters dated. Faye later told the Sunday News that, in order to help out, she had dropped out of school so she could look after Paula, explaining, quote, "She wasn't healthy from birth. We carried her around and fed her by spoon, and she wore diapers. We were very close. When I was 16, I dropped out of school to take care of her while my mother worked," end quote. Faye became very protective of Paula and considered her to be like her own child, and then she began seeing a man named Dick, and Paula was frequently involved in their activities. As luck would have it, Dick owned a car, and Paula became elated every time he showed up. Faye explained, quote, "As soon as she heard his footsteps coming in the house, she'd laugh and smile. She couldn't speak a word, but she knew she was going to go for a car ride," end quote. Over the next few years, Paula's sisters would all marry and move out of the family home. However, they frequently appeared for visits, and regardless of what was happening in her own life, Faye continued to care for Paula as though she was her own daughter. Sadly, despite all of the love Paula was surrounded by, her life would end before she could celebrate her 10th birthday. Early in July of 1962, Paula fell ill and was taken to the hospital. While the family hoped that she would recover, the child tragically would never make it back to their South Queen Street home. At 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday, August 7th, Paula passed away at St. Joseph's Hospital in Scranton. At the time of her death, Paula was 9 years, 5 months old. According to her death certificate, Paula died as a result of cardiorespiratory failure as a result of spastic paralysis from encephalitis. Her family was devastated by her passing, and while they had known there was a chance she wouldn't live a long life, there was not one among them who believed it would end so early. A funeral was held on Thursday, August 9th at the Young Funeral Home and was followed by burial, where Paula was laid to rest in the Babyland section of Riverview Burial Park on South Duke Street. Despite her passing, Paula remained a frequently discussed member of the Ream family, with her parents and siblings often visiting her grave, hoping that, free from the difficulties of the living world, she might be happily at peace in the thereafter. Her place in the Riverview Burial Park put her near ancestors, many of whom had been buried on the same grounds. Over the course of the next 48 years, many others would be laid to rest there, including her mother Mary, who passed away in 1982 at the age of 66, and later her father Paul, who died in 2004 at the age of 90. At the time of Mary's passing, she was interred in a grave beside Paula, and when Paul passed on himself more than 20 years later, he too was laid to rest beside his youngest daughter. Paula's sisters continued to frequent the cemetery, paying their respects to their parents and beloved little sister. In early August of 2010, several family members were attending the funeral of a family friend in Riverview when they made the short walk over to the Babyland section to visit Paula, placing flowers at her grave. They had no way of knowing at the time, but this would be the last chance they'd have to visit Paula's grave, knowing that the 9-year-old was still there in her child-sized coffin, resting peacefully beneath a simple flat stone reading only Paula M. Ream. Less than a week and a half later, the unthinkable would happen. The Riverview Burial Park is situated with South Duke Street running along the full length of the cemetery's eastern edge. It's bordered along the southern and western edges by woods and the curving of the Conestoga River, while the northern boundary is marked by a slim thicket of trees, behind which is a little shopping center. There are two main entrances, one on the northeastern edge and another on the southeastern corner. According to cemetery staff and Paula's family, the Babyland section is the most remote, found in the southernmost section of the cemetery, tucked between a row of trees and the woods to the south, approximately 500 feet from South Duke Street. At approximately 1 p.m. on Friday, August 13th, the cemetery's caretaker made a disturbing and horrifying discovery. Entering the Babyland section on a routine tour of the grounds to ensure everything was as it should be, the caretaker quickly noticed a large pile of dirt and debris in the middle of a row of graves. Moving in closer to get a better look, the man was horrified with what he saw. The grave of Paula Ream had been torn open and a large hole was lying open. Looking into the grave, the caretaker realized that someone hadn't just dug Paula's grave up. The perpetrator had broken open the vault. There, the caretaker found only empty space where the 9-year-old small casket should have been. In their rush to steal the child's remains, whoever was responsible had cast her small plaque aside, leaving it askew and partially covered in dirt. Seeing no signs that any other graves in the area had been disturbed, the caretaker rushed back to the office and notified the Lancaster police. Arriving at the scene, investigators were able to examine Paula's grave, quickly confirming that someone had indeed stolen the child's casket with her remains inside. Unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of evidence left behind to indicate who may have been responsible, and no one could wrap their heads around why such a hideous crime would be committed in the first place. Examining records kept by the caretaker and other employees, police were able to determine that Paula's grave had been undisturbed as late as 4 p.m. on Thursday, August 12th, meaning that whoever had broken into the cemetery and committed the grave robbery had to have struck between 4 p.m. Thursday and 1 p.m. Friday, with the crime likely happening during the night. Riverview Burial Park doesn't have gates, and while entering the cemetery after sunset is prohibited, there aren't any security measures to stop someone from getting in. At the time, investigators were unsure whether Paula's grave had specifically been targeted, or if maybe The grave robber had chosen it randomly after targeting the Babyland section itself, likely due to its remote location within the cemetery and the cover offered by the tree line and nearby woods. Detectives hoped that after notifying the family, they might be able to provide some insight into anyone who may have held a grudge against them and wanted to do them harm, or perhaps Paula herself. Not long after police were notified of the grave robbery, a police department chaplain accompanied by a city supervisor arrived at the home of Catherine O'Dell, then 66, then the youngest living Reem's sister. To say she was shocked by the news after the knock on her door would be an understatement, with O'Dell later telling the Sunday News, quote, "I saw the officer and I thought something happened to one of my kids or somebody was in an accident. It was just a shock. I said, you got to be kidding me. It's just something you see on TV, one of those unsolved mystery shows. It's just like it's unreal, like you're going to wake up and it's not true." End quote. Upon being notified, Catherine contacted her sisters who were devastated by the news, especially Faye, who had cared so closely and dearly for Paula. At the time, police informed the family that everything had been taken from Paula's grave, leaving behind only her marker and the torn open vault. Even the metal vase into which the family would deposit flowers had been taken. While investigators had hoped that they might find a lead or potential suspect through subsequent interviews, they instead were frustrated to discover that none of Paula's sisters could think of anyone who might have wanted to harm them or the little girl. There was no strife within the family, no grudges, no one who came to mind. It was beginning to look more and more like the crime had been random, though that wasn't very comforting, as it left police without any potential leads. Asked about the heartbreaking crime, Faye was frustrated and hurt, telling reporters, quote, "Us girls are all wondering, was it a random thing? The only thing we can think of is, was it because it was Friday the 13th? Or some cult, or somebody being initiated into something? God knows what possesses people like that. Her body and soul are in heaven. She was an angel. She never hurt anybody. I remember the day we buried her. It was bad, but not as bad as this. For anyone who has lost someone, you can just imagine losing that person twice." End quote. As the investigation began, the cemetery hired security guards to watch over the Babyland section of the cemetery, both to prevent further crimes, but also to steer curiosity seekers away from Paula's grave. At a press conference held by the Lancaster police, Sergeant Tim Fry announced that the investigation was still in its early stages, but they were hopeful they'd be able to track down the perpetrator. Asked whether or not the crime may be part of a series, or if there had been any other grave robberies in the area, Fry replied, quote, "This is an active investigation, and I don't know of this happening in the 20 years I've been in or around any of our burial parks." End quote. As part of the investigation, police began seeking information from anyone who had been in or around the cemetery in the days prior to the crime, though they quickly discovered that no one in the area had seen or heard anything out of place during the time that Paula's grave had been robbed. Just when it was beginning to appear that they weren't going to uncover anything, members of a construction crew reached out to police about a bizarre and disturbing scene they'd come upon a little over 9 months prior to the grave robbery. Southeast of the cemetery's Babyland section, South Duke Street splits off to the northeast along the Conestoga Greenway. In December of 2009, a group of contractors were hired to clear new pathways through the woods for the expansion of the Greenway when they stumbled upon a hidden clearing in the woods. This clearing, approximately a quarter mile from Paula's grave, had apparently been used by at least one person in what has been described as some kind of occult ritual. In the clearing, the workers found a chicken crate, and nearby, more than a dozen candles arranged in a 4-foot-wide circle. The candles had been burned down nearly to their bases, but enough remained for them to continue standing. Finding this odd but not thinking much of it, the workers continued down the greenway when, a mile further, they found a second chicken crate in another small clearing. This discovery soon led investigators to believe that the theft of Paula's remains may have been connected to religious or ritualistic practices of some sort. Keith Sadler, chief of the Lancaster Police, explained to the Intelligencer Journal that at the time, they weren't sure of what exactly they were dealing with, saying, quote, "There's no telling what could turn up in a case like this. There's a lot of sick people who seem to get enjoyment out of this, whether it's a religious practice or somebody who's really sick and demented and thinks it will be funny," end quote. In hopes of generating more information and leads, Chief Sadler announced that the Lancaster City County Crime Stoppers were offering a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and conviction. With news of the grave robbery going national, the Lancaster police were contacted by multiple police departments across the country who had been investigating similar crimes. Police in Stamford, Connecticut notified investigators that a year prior, in mid-2009, they had found evidence connecting the robbery of a child's grave to ritualistic practices. Reportedly, chicken heads, candles, and other unidentified objects were found in the cemetery near to where the grave had been robbed. Later in July of 2009, fishermen working along the Passaic River in New Jersey had discovered the missing child's body floating in a plastic bag. The child was identified as 2-year-old Imani Joyner, who had died in 2007. Thankfully, her recovered remains were in good condition, and she was able to be returned to her grave. At birth, Joyner had been diagnosed with a rare neurological disorder and was dubbed a miracle baby for living far longer than any doctors had anticipated. Investigators believe this may have been a reason for the theft of her remains, suggesting the crime might be connected to a ritual conducted as part of Palo Mayombe, an Afro-Cuban religion with ties to rituals often defined as witchcraft or voodoo. Similar evidence found in the cemetery, chicken heads, were also discovered near to where the child's body had been found in the river. 3 years earlier, in 2006, Florida authorities discovered that the grave of 6-year-old Stevie Dale had been robbed. Someone managed to push off the 600-pound marble lid of the crypt in which he had been interred, leaving behind a severed pig's head and cow's tongue. For months prior to the theft, the cemetery caretaker had found decapitated chickens scattered throughout the burial ground. Asked whether or not they believed the theft of Paula's body might be directly connected to a ritual, perhaps even associated with Palo Mayombe, Chief Sadler was dismissive of the esoteric possibilities, telling the journal, quote, "I'm not concerned about that. What I am concerned about is that they dug up somebody's family member and disturbed somebody's resting place. It's extremely disrespectful to the family and the deceased. They need to be prosecuted for that," end quote. While investigators had received word of many similar crimes throughout the country in the previous years, as it turned out, other cemeteries in Pennsylvania had been dealing with a series of grave robbing attempts and vandalism. 10 days after Paula's grave was robbed, someone tried to break into a sarcophagus at Lancaster Cemetery, less than 2 miles northwest of Riverview at Lemon and Lime Streets. A limestone grave covering was smashed to pieces, which the unknown perpetrator scattered into the grass. Months earlier, groundskeepers discovered 2 severed chicken heads in the historic cemetery, though whether or not they were connected to the vandalism was unknown. Woodward Hill Cemetery, which sits less than a mile from Riverview and between Riverview and Lancaster Cemetery, had also been targeted in the months prior to the theft of Paula's body. A month before the crime in July, someone had entered Woodward Hill and smashed multiple grave markers, specifically targeting ones which had religious symbolism on them. In August, the same month of the crime, someone had disabled the cemetery's motion sensor lights and had attempted to break into a small building standing near the grave of former President James Buchanan. Asked about the possibility that all of the Lancaster area crimes were connected, Chief Sadler wasn't yet ready to make that link, saying, quote, "Until we make that determination, I'm not quick to make a broad statement like that. The whole thing is strange. It just is. It's almost mind-boggling that someone would go to that length. Nothing is ruled out, like in any investigation, until something points in a specific direction. I don't care what someone's beliefs are. A crime was committed and no justification is going to satisfy any of us or that little girl's family. Nothing gives you the right to desecrate someone's burial site," end quote. On Wednesday, August 25th, police received a call from caretakers at Lancaster Cemetery reporting a vandal. According to the report, a man had thrown a large rock at a decorative gravesite cover in view of cemetery employees. Lieutenant Todd Umstead told the Journal that they were actively investigating as the unknown individual had damaged a bronze statue shaped like a church. While there was no attempt to enter a grave or mausoleum, it was considered possible that the individual could be connected to the theft of Paula's body. The employee who witnessed the rock throwing was able to describe the suspect to police, noting that it had been a white male in his 20s or 30s with dirty blonde hair, a medium build, and wearing an orange polo shirt and dark pants. Umstead reported to the media, saying, quote, "There was no further attempt to actually enter a grave. Still, we want to find that individual and question him further." End quote. On Thursday, August 26th, just over 2 weeks after Paula's grave was dug up, the nearby Woodward Hill Cemetery was hit again. Sometime after midnight, vandals cut a heavy chain which blocks the main entrance to the cemetery so they could drive their car inside. This time, they approached a mausoleum in a back lane of the cemetery near the tree line. Somehow, they managed to gain entry to the structure, although they'd soon find there was nothing inside. According to Ken Norman, the treasurer of the cemetery board, while the cemetery did have security cameras, the perpetrator somehow knew how to avoid being captured by them. Curiously, Woodward Hill is located along Queen Street, the same road Paula's family had lived on when she was born. A neighbor living near the cemetery later told investigators that just after midnight on the 26th, she had seen someone moving through the graveyard with a light. Ken Norman told the Journal, quote, "They busted things up again. It looks like they were inside, but there's nothing in there. We're trying to be vigilant because there's been so much of this kind of activity lately. We're keeping the police informed. We're hoping they can catch the people who are doing this. This is something we constantly have to deal with. All this recent vandalism is very disheartening." End quote. According to Norman, a group of local volunteers had recently been involved in restoring many damaged tombstones and mausoleums, and now they had to start all over again. Fortunately, this appears to have been the last incident of vandalism targeting any of the three cemeteries that year, but this also meant that the investigation into the theft of Paula's remains began growing cold. By November, it appeared, they were beginning to lose hope that the case would be cracked and Paula's remains recovered. Lieutenant Umstead explained to the Sentinel that an absence of witnesses and a limited number of tips had left them with few avenues to explore. Paula's family were very upset to learn that there was a high likelihood that Paula's body may never be found. Speaking to reporters that month, Faye expressed the sadness and grief she felt over the crime, explaining, quote, "We think it's a cult responsible. You hate to point fingers at any group, but almost every day there's a big article in the news here about weird things. I hope they trip themselves up and get caught. I hope and pray to that every day. Everybody has lost a loved one, and you don't want them to end up like that. To take Paula's body is unbelievable." End quote. Discussing the possibility of cult involvement in ritualistic practices, Johnny Purvis, a professor at the University of Central Arkansas, offered some insights into why Paula may have been selected. He explained, quote, "I have worked many grave robberies, and I can tell you this happens a lot all over the country. Typically, in the cases I've seen, they're after the skull. They will make a chalice out of it and use it in ceremonies. It's horrible." Paula was born in 1962, and she was 9 years old. 9 is a multiple of 3, something they might consider important. It could be her date of birth, death, what the numbers add up to in her name. You have to look for a lot of things. This is why a lot of occultists consider what they do more of a science. End quote. While some were convinced there had to be a cult link, perhaps to Palo Mayombe, perhaps to something else, others believed the crime may have been a poorly thought-out prank executed by local teenagers since it had happened on Friday the 13th. Sadly, by December of 2010, the investigation into Paula's case had completely stalled, and all leads and tips, few of them that there had ever been, had completely dried up, leaving her heartbroken family to enter the holiday season, unsure of what the suspect may have done to their beloved sister. In August of 2011, a year after Paula's grave was robbed, the Intelligencer Journal wrote a lengthy article interviewing investigators and the family about what had happened over the previous 12 months. Lieutenant Umstead explained that they had exhausted all possibilities in their search for Paula, noting that they had dragged the Conestoga River and conducted multiple searches throughout the surrounding woods with no results. By this time, Umstead was leaning more towards the ritual possibility, saying that certain tips had pointed in that direction, though he specified, quote, "This has led us down some very strange and unusual paths. It's a very bizarre crime. We're going to keep working at it and to try and find out who stole this little girl's body. Some of the roads that have been explored are cults and religious groups," end quote. While they weren't able to make a lot of progress in Paula's case, their investigation into the sarcophagus break-in at Lancaster Cemetery revealed that it was not connected to the robbery of Paula's grave. Catherine O'Dell, asked about how the family was handling things a year later, was still clearly disturbed both with the crime and the lack of developments, saying, quote, "It's just so unreal. You lay your loved one to rest, and then something like this happens. Are they ever going to find her? Are they ever going to find anything out?" End quote. According to Faye, family members continued to visit Paula's grave, though each time they hoped she would soon be returned to her rightful resting place. Bizarrely, a similarly upsetting crime occurred just the next month in Northside Cemetery. At 9 a.m. on Monday, September 26th, Northside Superintendent George Alenick called 911 to report someone had robbed a grave. At the scene, investigators found a hole measuring 2 feet long, 5 feet wide, and 4 feet deep. Surrounding the hole were several piles of dirt, mixed into which they found a metal placard showing that the grave belonged to Walter Lawrence Roberts. Roberts, who had died at the age of 12 more than 100 years earlier in 1911, had tragically been struck by a train. Alenick was deeply disturbed by the crime, explaining to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "Why would they pick an old grave like that? What was their theory? What were they after? That's the mystery of it all," end quote. Sadly, that crime has not been solved either. More than 11 years have passed since someone dug up Paula's grave and made off with her body and casket. While the case had initially shown some promise of being solved, in the years since, there have been no major updates nor leads developed. Whether or not the crime was connected to a ritual, an ill-humored prank, or something else has never been determined. The crime continues to haunt Lancaster, with people struggling to understand how or why someone would commit such a heartless, heinous crime against a child who lived a difficult life and had laid at rest peacefully for nearly half a century. 5 years after the grave robbery, on August 12, 2015, Faye passed away. In her obituary, it was noted that she'd been preceded in death by her dear little sister, Paula. Despite the passage of years, this crime had been incredibly upsetting for Faye, who hoped, until her last moments, that Paula would be found and brought home. Asked about the crime a few years before she passed, Faye explained, quote, "I just can't imagine that there are that kind of people out there in the world. It's so sad. It's a horrible thing. It was a hard thing to lose her once, but then to lose her again, it wasn't easy. Whatever evil person did this, I'm sure they covered their tracks, but they have to live with it. Someday, they will have to answer for what they did. We're paying now, but they will pay later." This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check out betterhelp.com/trace. Life is full of stressors. It doesn't matter who you are or what you have, your life is probably stressful. Whether it's the seemingly endless stream of monthly bills or your inability to put together a schedule that balances life and work, it can be overwhelming. You may not be feeling down and out and depressed, or like you're at a total loss. But if your stress is high, your temper is shorter than usual, or even if you're starting to feel strain in your relationships, you could probably use the chance to unload that stress. When there are things you can't tell anyone or feel like you can't unload to family or friends, you need to get it out. And now, thanks to BetterHelp, it's easier and more cost-effective than ever. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback. You'll be pretty surprised at what you might gain from it. See if it's for you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Trace Evidence listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/trace. That's BETTERHELP.com/trace. Always up for a good whodunit? Then you'll love June's Journey. You play as June Parker, an amateur detective investigating a series of mysteries full of twists and turns around every corner. You'll put your powers of observation to the test, sharpen your sleuthing skills, and relish the thrill of solving the case. June's Journey is full, colorful, and full of surprises and entertainingly engaging. An interesting and curiosity-stirring storyline keeps you looking for more as the game evolves, leading you to work harder to solve the mystery at hand. If you enjoy well-developed characters, intriguing mysteries, and the challenge of investigating, June's Journey is the game for you. Whether you're craving a good mystery or just need to get away for a while, June's Journey is the perfect game for you. Sit back, relax, and let your inner Sherlock escape to the glamorous, roaring 20s. You'll search for hidden clues to solve mystery after mystery across thousands of vivid scenes. And with new chapters every week, there's always a new case waiting to be cracked. If you're listening to Trace Evidence, then I know you'll love digging in and testing your powers of detection as much as I do. I really enjoy relaxing on the couch after a busy day of work and just getting lost in a new and fun adventure. June's Journey helps me wind down while keeping my mind sharp and entertained. Ready to awaken your inner detective? Download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. I love that sound. The sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Like mine, Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses, from first sale to full scale. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is possibility, powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/trace, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/trace right now. Remember, trace is all lowercase letters. There are more unsolved crimes than any podcast, television show, or all podcasts and television shows combined could ever cover. As a result, there's a tendency to go for the most notorious crimes to be covered extensively. Then there are lesser covered crimes, the ones few have heard about, but which deserve far more attention than they receive. I've covered a lot of those here on Trace Evidence, and many pods I respect, like The Trail Went Cold, dedicate their work towards shining light on crimes that might break with just a little more attention and a little more investigation. Researching and covering an abduction, disappearance, or murder usually results in a lot of contradictory information. It's a fight to get down to the truth of the matter, to discern between fact and fiction, myth and reality. Then there are the lesser crimes. The ones where finding anything is almost impossible. It's a topic often debated. Why are some crimes overlooked while others are seemingly covered everywhere? See Ted Bundy and Israel Keyes for some examples. But what about the crimes that almost no one pays attention to? The ones that, in a sense, are considered less important because they haven't targeted a living person. All too often, we ignore grave robbery, whether it's due to the difficult realities of those crimes, our own fear of something like that happening to a loved one of our own, or maybe because some would argue there's less of an intriguing angle to follow. The holiday season is a strange time for me to have covered this case, I admit, but I've been researching the theft of Paula's body for a large portion of this past year. There's something about desecrating a cemetery, stealing a body, which has always disturbed me. A murder is monstrous, but dismemberment of the body is an added insult after the crime. It's another defenseless person being attacked. I believe that the dead have paid their due and deserve respect and peace, regardless of what you believe about this life, whether it all ends with your last breath or there's something more beyond. I think most of us can agree that disturbing someone's grave is ghastly, horrifying, and grotesque. I suppose around this time of year, it's easy to think of the good things, celebrating with family, sharing love and time together. For me, it's always around the holidays that I tend to think of those who have been left without. The families who have lost loved ones, be it due to a crime or a natural event. I spend a lot of time in cemeteries, visiting my own relatives, and recording details for groups like Find a Grave and Billion Graves. I can't imagine how I'd feel. The pain, the grief, the violation and the helplessness should I one day find some hideous figure has desecrated the burial place of a relative. If there are monsters that can stalk the living, then I can only refer to those who would commit such crimes as ghouls. In the case of Paula Rehm, this is a 9-year-old who was born with a debilitating disorder that limited her abilities and shortened her time on this earth. Yet she had nearly 9.5 years of being loved by her family and cared for. For 48 years, she was interred at the Riverview Burial Park, later surrounded by her parents. Her sisters visited often, bringing flowers and mourning the loss of those who meant so much to them. Then one night, an unknown person or persons entered the cemetery, dug up the ground, broke open the vault, and stole the small coffin which contained Paula's remains. I can't begin to imagine what it must have been like for her sisters to hear that horrible news, and 11 years later, for the answers to remain obscured. There aren't a lot of theories about the crime. In all reality, investigators never had much to work with. At first, they believed it may have had something to do with Friday the 13th, a sick prank executed by teenagers who either didn't think about the effects of their actions or who simply didn't care. Then, with the discovery of the chicken crate and the circle of candles in the woods nearby, the possibility of some kind of cult or ritualistic behavior was brought into the conversation. Based on the fact that there aren't a great deal of clues, it's difficult to really narrow it down or examine things too deeply, but we'll give it a shot. I, much like investigators, originally figured this had to be the kind of thing teenagers might do. Whether it was for attention, credit amongst their friends, or just to celebrate Friday the 13th in a nightmarish way. It's difficult to look for a motive or logic behind a crime that truly fits the definition of senseless. How heartless must someone be to do something so cruel and terrible? It's easy to imagine it had to be someone who wasn't thinking, or doesn't possess the capacity to think about things in a more complex way. Someone who doesn't consider the repercussions or results of their heinous acts. Someone who doesn't care, and simply does what they want to do for, maybe, no real reason at all. In what I can only call a bizarre coincidence, when I was in high school, I was aware of a kid who was arrested for a similar crime. While he didn't steal the body and coffin of a child, he did open a grave and remove pieces of that body. All in all, it took investigators less than 48 hours to track him down because, in his sheer genius, he walked into a 7-Eleven across the street from the graveyard covered in dirt and was caught on camera. I didn't know him very well. More so, I knew his name and recognized him. So I never had the opportunity to ask him why he would do something so terrible, so stupid, and so thoughtless. I heard rumors that he did it to be cool, which, if that was his plan, backfired horribly as he became a social pariah afterwards. Regardless, I wish now I might have had some insights into his thought process so I could try and apply them here. So is this a crime a teen or a group of teens could have pulled off? Sure, The problem for me is, however, what are the chances they'd be able to keep it under their lids? Kids talk, they spread rumors, they want credit. Someone would have heard about it. There'd be a suspect. Whether it was a friend who was bragging or someone who was disgusted by what they heard, I find it hard to believe a teenager or group of them could pull this crime off without ever leaking their connection to it. Also, we're talking about a lot of work here. The person who robbed Paula's grave didn't make a big mess. They didn't damage surrounding tombstones and plots. They seemed laser-focused on her. They dug the hole, broke open the vault, and removed the casket, escaping before anyone noticed, though they left the hole unfilled, which may suggest that they were younger or frightened, or maybe a car drove by and they decided not to take the time to fill it in, or maybe they were never planning to in the first place. Which seems like a good way to get caught, but since these people were never captured, apparently it worked out for them. This is a crime that, while it could be committed by one person, would have been a lot easier with someone helping. A vault lid is not easy to lift and weighs several hundred pounds. Lifting a casket out of the ground can be an overwhelming physical challenge, and while a child's casket is likely far less heavy than an adult's, it's still a complex act to perform on your own. In all honesty, were this a crime merely carried out by a group of teens, I find it difficult to believe they'd have taken the whole casket. It seems more likely they'd be inclined to remove part of the body, but why take the entire casket with the body inside? Also, where the hell do you go with something like that? Certainly not the kind of thing you go home and just put under your bed. So while I'm not dismissing the possibility of teens pulling a gruesome prank, I think this may be part of something more complex and sophisticated. So that turns us towards the cult and ritual aspect. In the evidence section, I brought up Paolo Mayombe because it was discussed several times in articles about the investigation, but I think there's a lot of different groups who are involved in similar practices. Whether they're some kind of a dark cult who believes in the power of bones or are somehow interested in numerology related to a particular person's age, birth date, death date, or some other combination of factors. Just earlier this year, two men were arrested for grave robbing in Miami, noting that they were focused on obtaining skulls in connection with Paolo Mayombe. There are also those who steal bodies to sell them. Arthur Kennedy, a cemetery caretaker in Florida, told the Herald that, on more than one occasion, he's been offered cash in exchange for bones. Apparently, there's quite a bit of money to be made selling bones and other body parts on the black market. So we have no way of knowing if Paula's grave was targeted because the grave robbers sought to make money, or if they were involved in practices which required the use of human remains. Considering the vandalism and other grave robberies in the area, it seems likely that Paula's crime was probably connected to something more than a one-off incident. All across the country and the world, grave robbing happens a lot more than we hear about, at least beyond the bounds of small blurbs and newspaper articles that receive little, if any, follow-up. So, as is the case with the teenager story, it's certainly possible there's some kind of occult connection. When you factor in the chicken crates and the circle of candles, you have to determine, was this part of a ritual or was it made to appear as though it was? Perhaps by those who aren't directly connected to the occult, but want to create their own disturbing practices. At the end of the day, all we really know is that someone made the horrifying decision to desecrate the grave of a child, and now, after all these years, her family has lost her for the second time. Police were never able to get a solid lead, nor could they track down where Paula's remains may have been taken or what was done to them. While we can hope that she might be found someday and returned to her resting place, the more years pass, the less likely it seems. How you come to terms with that, how you accept the powerlessness of losing someone not once but twice and in such a terribly disturbing way is something I can't begin to fathom. But there is hope. Someone out there, someone knows what happened. Whether it's the perpetrator, a relative, a friend, someone out there has the body of a child or part of it, and all it would take is one phone call to begin to set things right. If you've ever lost a loved one, you know how heavy the grief can be and overwhelming the pain can become. All someone needs to do is speak up. Tell what you know. Send an anonymous letter. Leave a tip online. While the odiousness of the act can never be undone, The power to set a family at ease and to return a little girl to her grave is not out of reach. I and investigators have no doubt that someone who lived in or around Lancaster in 2010 knows exactly who is responsible for this. So please, if it's you, tell what you know. Help assuage some of the horrors the Ream family has had to endure over this past decade, because honestly, without someone's help, the theft of Paula Ream's body is a case which is going to remain open, unsolved, and growing cold. If you're looking for more information about the theft of Paula Ream, there are many articles and online forums discussing her case. The Intelligencer Journal has done the most extensive coverage. If you have any information about the grave robbery of Paula Reams, please contact the Lancaster Police Department at 717-735-3300. You can also contact Lancaster County Crime Stoppers at 1-800-322-1913 or by visiting their website at lancaster.crimewatchpa.com/crimestoppers. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Trace Evidence would not be possible without support from amazing listeners like you. And now I'd like to take a moment to thank our fantastic Patreon producers: Alicia Lorraine, Anne Bertram, Brittany Bivens, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, Denise Dingsdale, Donna Buttram, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Eloanne Meyer, Eric Sumpter, Guillerme Pinto, Haley Christie, James, Jen Treb, Jennifer Winkler, Jill Sense, Joni Berkowitz, Julie Mangano, Kara Moreland, Lars Jensen Fangel, Leslie B, Marla Wright, Melissa Brakeisen, Nick Mohar Schurz, Orange Patches, Quinn McBreen, Roberta Jansen, Sarah Levinen, Sarah Lyons, Travis Skepko, Stacy Finnegan, Stephanie Joyner, Stephanie Eve, Adorable Susie Summers, Taylor, Tom Archer, Tom Radford, and Tracy Woods. Your contributions to Trace Evidence are invaluable, and your support of the show is both appreciated and extremely humbling. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence and gaining access to exclusive merch and ad-free episodes, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence or go to trace-evidence.com and click on the support option. I want to thank you all for listening to this episode, as grim and disturbing as the topic was. I also want to say that I hope those of you who celebrate will have a wonderful holiday season. And of course, I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.